Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Brian Lehrer Show here on WNYC. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson, sitting in for Brian. Thanks for tuning in. We want now to follow up on something we talked about yesterday. Dozens of colleges and universities across the country are changing how they handle sexual misconduct on campus after students have been filing complaints with the Federal Office of Civil Rights. The federal government has issued new guidelines to colleges on how to deal with sexual violence, and Columbia University is one of the schools that recently unveiled changes to the way it handles sexual assault allegations. Yesterday on our show, a Columbia student and activist shared her concerns about the new policy, as well as some support for it. And today we're going to hear from the school. My guest is Suzanne Goldberg, Columbia University's special advisor to the president on sexual assault prevention and response, as well as a Columbia Law School professor. Hi, Professor Goldberg. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much.
So as I said yesterday on our show, we were talking about changes to these policies at a few different schools. Can you remind us again what exactly is new and different at Columbia?
At Columbia in particular, there are a couple of key features that are new and different about the policy. But what I would say by way of general background is that the new policy at Columbia, like new policies in other institutions, builds on the strength of the previous policy and provides enhanced support and procedures for the campus. So some of the central features, which pick up on suggestions from students as well as guidance from the federal government, include a shift in the way that hearings are conducted, so students are no longer on the panels, include the ability of a student who is a complainant or a respondent, meaning somebody who has brought a complaint or has been accused of violating the gender-based misconduct policy, to bring an advisor with him. That advisor can now include a lawyer. And then we at Columbia have also expanded our office, in essence, where students can go when they have a complaint. So any student across the university can go to our gender-based misconduct office, where they can meet with a case manager who will not only give them information about the investigation process and the hearing process, but will also help refer them to all sorts of other resources around campus and beyond.
Well, and of course, people had real concerns with how the school was handling sexual assault allegations. At least one person went public with her side of the story. She said that some of the administrators at her hearings didn't seem prepared or qualified to deal with what had happened to her. She essentially said she felt like she had to kind of give a sex ed class to these administrators in recounting her assault at a hearing, which she said was embarrassing and, of course, traumatic again. How did the committee in charge of changing the policy try to address these really serious concerns?
The hearing officers at Columbia and presumably elsewhere have always had training, and, of course, the university doesn't speak to the particulars of any given hearing. But the new policy makes specific additional provisions related to training for hearing officers, training for what we call sanctioning officers. That is the student affairs administrators who will impose a sanction if a person accused of violating our policy is found responsible, and training for everybody up and down the process. In addition to training specifically related to complaints of gender-based misconduct, including sexual assault, a wide range of people across the campus receive training about responding to complaints related to gender-based misconduct. And every new student coming in goes through an orientation, and it's a quite extensive one for our new students, where they will be trained as well. So, of course, the people handling complaints up and down the process here will receive training, and the student orientation and prevention efforts more generally are being expanded so that the entire campus is much more aware of both prevention and how to respond in the case of sexual assault or other gender-based misconduct.
I want to have you respond to a couple of the specific concerns that our guest yesterday had. The student and activist we spoke to yesterday, Michaela Weil from the group No Red Tape. We should say she said she is happy about many of the changes that have taken place. But she also said this.
I think to start with, it's really important to emphasize that overall the way this was brought about is not okay. There's been student activism going on campus for months trying to push for new policies, part of that activism being an entirely rewritten policy of what we wanted to see at the school, and administrators have pretty much entirely refused to meet with us or consider that, and then went behind the back of people who that policy, previous policy, had failed to create a new policy. And so that is creating a lot of frustration.
Professor Suzanne Goldberg, how would you respond to that frustration?
Yeah, let me respond in a few ways. Certainly, the students have been very effective both in raising awareness of these issues generally and in advancing some specific suggestions, including related to the way in which the university provides accommodations from the moment a student has contact with an administrator related to their experience of gender-based misconduct. In addition, the new policy reflects students' requests for anyone who's violated the policy to have retraining or training particular to their violation to try to train away from violation again. And the third point is that the policy itself responds both to student suggestions that were raised throughout the past year, as well as to the university's commitment to creating a safe campus here and building on the foundation of the previous policy, and in addition to federal guidance from the Office of Civil Rights of the Department of Education. So that guidance, which runs almost 50 pages, was issued at the very end of April. The university, as universities do, took a look at this policy and other policies, as universities do during the summertime, and worked intensely to have a policy in place for the start of the school year. What's important to note is that the policy itself, on the very inside page, makes clear that it invites students' suggestions and input in an ongoing way. In addition, there will be public fora, presumably across the entire year, where students will be able to bring in their ideas, both about the policy itself. I suspect most of the ideas will relate to implementation, right, to things more particular than one might include in a general policy of rules and regulations.
Lastly, I just want to bring up one other point that Michaela Wild brought up. But not only her, this is, I think, the most common concern that I've heard raised around these issues. And that is that there is a perception that there's an inherent conflict of interest in having the dean of the school for the person accused be in charge of the investigation, or even just a conflict of interest with universities being the ones administering these hearings in the first place. How would you respond to that, both as a professor at Columbia, but also as a lawyer?
Right. So they're both great questions. And on those questions and on many questions related to sexual assault on college campuses, there are a lot of challenging issues. But I think there are actually quite clear responses to both. First, with respect to the role of deans. So essentially what happens is a student who files a complaint will, if they want to go forward in the process, there will be an investigation, a hearing panel will then be assigned, and if the alleged perpetrator, who we call the respondent, is found responsible, a sanctioning officer from the university will impose a sanction. If either side, the complainant or respondent, is not happy with that result, they have an opportunity under the policy to appeal on certain grounds. Appeals go to the deans of the respondent school. When a dean gets an appeal, they don't sit in their office alone and think about, well, what should I do here? First of all, they've been trained. Second of all, if the complainant is from a different school, say you have somebody from the undergraduate school and the law school, right? The two deans will confer. And in addition, the dean who's making the decision on an appeal always confers with the director of the gender-based misconduct office. So it is never that the dean hearing an appeal is making a determination in a vacuum. In addition, the dean of the respondent school is in the best position to make final determinations about penalties or sanctions imposed on the conduct of one of their students. I hear people talk about a conflict of interest, but the dean's main interest, the dean of any school's main interest, is having a strong academic and educational environment in which all students can thrive. If there is a problem of a student violating a gender-based misconduct policy within a school, the dean will deal appropriately with that because they have every interest in having the academic learning environment and the social environment at the school be safe and accessible to all. On the other question, you know, who should hear these kinds of cases, the criminal process or a university? Let me first say a word about the law. So Title IX and the guidance that we've received from the Office of Civil Rights, from the Department of Education and elsewhere requires two things. It requires first that whenever a university becomes aware of gender-based misconduct, including sexual assault taking place on its campus, it has an obligation to investigate, and if the investigation bears out, to respond to those incidents, as well as to provide interim protections during the time the investigation is taking place. So that will happen in addition to anything that might or might not be happening on the criminal investigation front. And it's very important that that happen. If universities stepped away from being responsible for or even having an obligation to be aware of sexual violence on their campuses, I think we would not be in the right place.
Secondly, whether a student
wants to pursue an investigation process at a university or with the police, they can do either. They can do both. So they are not mutually exclusive processes. The reason I think it is important for universities to be able to have a sanctioning process in addition to whatever happens through law enforcement is that is really for the benefit – well, for the benefit both of students and the campus as a whole. For the students involved, some students prefer to work within the university. Some of the reasons are quite practical. The university is very sensitive to students' academic schedules, moves things along much more quickly than will happen typically in a criminal investigation process.
And Professor Goldberg, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we are out of time. We're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank you very much for coming on the program. We're very glad to have this perspective on it. I've been speaking with Suzanne Goldberg, Columbia University's Special Advisor to the President on Sexual Assault Prevention and Response, as well as a Columbia Law School professor. And in the interest of full disclosure, I should mention that Columbia is also my alma mater. I'm Isaac Davey Aronson in for Brian Lehrer here on WNYC. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.